Our first reading today, the prophet Zechariah speaks the time of King David and a time of Jerusalem. It's a time of mourning and a time of discourse. What we've been told is there's been a death. One has been pierced. We don't know who. We don't know if it was an actual person or if the prophet was speaking about an eschatological being or a person. We don't know how he was wounded, but we know he was wounded, and it's apparent that the wound that has been caused has brought about his death. And the whole town is in mourning. From the king of David himself and all of his family in Jerusalem, they have accepted like a culpability. They have accepted the fact that they have caused the death of this person. And there's great mourning throughout Jerusalem. They go on to give us two examples of just how deep the mourning is. They say the mourning for the loss is like the loss of a first son, the firstborn, the person who is expected to carry on the line, the heir to everything in the family, the one who would become responsible for the family in future generations. They go on to say it is like the mourning found after Megiddo. 609 BC, young King Josiah was killed. And when he was killed, the future of the entire nation of Israel became very, very much in question. That's how deep the mourning is for the loss of this one whom they will look upon who has been pierced. But God gives them a sign of hope. He says that from them will spring a water, a flowing water, not a dead water, but a flowing water that will wash them and help them to overcome their mourning. And the mourning will become joy. Taking this, then, we step forward to the gospel today. To truly understand the gospel, we have to understand or have read what happened just prior to this and why Jesus' reaction is the same. It is. At the beginning or near the beginning of the ninth chapter of the Gospel of Luke, Jesus is in an open plain and many, many people are coming. And Jesus is laying hands upon them, and he's giving the blind back their sight, and the cripples are walking, and the people that are sick are being cured. And then Jesus takes 5 loaves and 2 fishes in front of all these people, performs a miracle. He feeds over 5,000, and not only does he feed them, but there is much left over, and there's much stir that he has done this, and he has to withdraw by himself. So we hear him ask the disciples, "Who do the people say that I am?" And they're beginning to acquaint him with the Old Testament prophecies. Some say Elijah, some say Moses, some say some of the other great prophets. And then he asks them the question, "But who do you say that I am?" Because he wants to know if they understand. Peter says, "You are the Christ of God." And then he strictly tells them, "Do not tell this to anyone else because there's a reason." Jesus is about to separate fact from fiction. What he does not want is the people of Israel to think that he is the Messiah, the one that they have saw predicted for years and for centuries, because that Messiah in their minds would be a political Messiah, someone who would raise up Israel, would be a great king, would lead an army, and Israel would become independent and a world power. And Jesus is saying no. And then he tells them why. The reality is this Messiah, this anointed, this Christ would suffer, die, be crucified, buried, and would rise again. The Messiah that would be given would be different from the ones that expected. And why did this Messiah come this way? For love. He came because God had everything. St. Francis of Assisi said Jesus Christ was the humility of God. And what he meant by that is God had everything. God had everything except the one thing he wanted the most, you. He couldn't have you because there was sin. And because of that sin, he sent his only son into the world. Prophecies would say he would be the one. Upon him would be the chastisement for all of us. We would look upon the one who would be wounded for our offenses. His stripes we would be healed. By the chastisements laid upon him, we would be made whole. That's how much God loves us. So if Jesus was here today, I don't think he would ask the question, who do you say that I am? Because we know who he is. That's a sign of love. We know who he is. But the question he might ask today is, how is it that you live your lives that other people know you know me? There's the question. How is it that you live, that your relationship with me, others know that you love me? You see, if you go back to the beginning of the gospel, there was a very important line there. Jesus was by himself in solitude praying to the Father. Jesus always prayed to the Father before something great or after anything great happened because he had a relationship with the Father. There was so much love, they were inseparable. St. Augustine said Jesus was the sacrament of the Father. Sacraments are visible signs of an invisible God. Jesus was God made visible. Jesus himself said, to know this me is to know the Father. To have seen me is to have seen the Father. So there was an inseparable relationship. Now, if I was to ask you the question, who do you say that I am, what would you say? You'd say, well, you're Deacon Mike. We know that. You've been around here for 7 or 8 years. We know who you are. But if I was to ask my wife that question, and she was being nice, she would say, that's my husband. Now, there's a difference between me knowing you and her knowing me. Because there's a love relationship that exists between us. And there are some times that I do things that upset my wife. And I'll be honest with you, she said this more than once to me. Mike, I love you, but I just don't like you too much right now. Ever feel that way about your husbands or your wives? Either way? Then you know what I'm talking about. You realize that when you love someone, there are times, even if you don't intend to, sometimes you selfishly hurt them. And that's true of our relationship with God. Even when we don't intend to, sometimes the selfishness of our lives take over. That's why Jesus said, if you want to come after me, you must deny yourself. You must begin to think about me. You must want me in your life all the days of your lives. My friends, the evil one exists. If you went, then he's done a good job. See, I think the evil one has done a wonderful job of this last century of two things. Number one, he's made people, especially maybe younger people, to believe I don't exist. That's just something they scared me with. And the second thing he's done a good job of is making us believe we have all the time in the world. Well, I can testify to something that happened on 3:17 here at 7 o'clock in the morning. Well, it was about 7:45. I sat down, my heart took off, I couldn't catch my breath. Next thing I know, I'm on the floor. Father Ralph said he thought I was dead. And I'm lucky enough to have rolled over and hadn't been looking up and seeing people saying, are you all right? But what I learned with that is, my friends, is simply this. You don't always have time to have regret. There's no promise that you will have time to make amends, to say the things that you want to say, to be the person you wish you could have done, to do the things you wish you could have done. What we have is now. What we have is now. What do we have now? A miracle. The man who fed 5,000 is about to become present here. And his body broken for us and his blood poured out for us. He is going to be present to each one of us. They say we are what we eat. I say this different. When you consume this food today, will you become him? When you leave here today, will you be able to answer the question that Jesus would have asked? How do they know you love me by the way you live your life?